the day, some animals used to attack us. So our old timers way back used to travel at night. So on Chelco Lake, Telkohpi, they were traveling with a canoe. And in those days, our people, you know, they really trained well. They followed the Tsakhotin law from inside the mother's womb, all the rules around having a baby and teachings as they grow up about all the, I guess legends is not the right word, but all the Sataha, I call it in our language, Sataha is way back in creation time. Anyways, our old timers used to, you know, they said that we all spoke Chilcotin, the animals and the birds and the fish, like I was telling you. And they would get certain animal power when they become an adult. So anyways, back to the story. They said that there's a point, Estela, we call it, that point that goes out into the lake, down by Chelco, that point that's sort of right by the Nehemiah Creek. And they were going fast at night with a canoe, and they ran into this point. So this point came out of nowhere, they said, back in the day. And when they hit it, it's like it happened all of a sudden. So Khan, that's what Khan in our language, Khan means sudden. And Ni is like in the land, like the land goes into the lake by the point. So it's almost like the Maya Valley goes all the way and goes out into the lake with this point. So that's why they call that Hani. And Gwit'in means the people. So that's where Hani Gwit'in got its name.
Thank you for listening to The Regime. I'm Yenny. This is at CKMS 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo.
With me is Chief Dr. Roger William.
Hani Gwit'in.
In British Columbia, First Nations person. Thank you so much for coming on The Regime tonight. So do you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you for allowing me to come on. This is my name is Roger William. I'm a Hani Gwit'in, Tsilkotin. I'm a chief. This is my 24th year in as chief. And, you know, I'm born on a horse because my mother was raking with team horses, raking hay, and she got into labor, and my auntie and my grandfather delivered me. So then I was back on her back, and she was back to work. So, you know, as I grew up, I sat on her back, eventually on my own horse, and it's been such an honor. Where I've been, I speak Tsilkotin fluently. I've learned English in the residential school. I was in the residential school 3 years. So, cowboy, indigenous. I know a lot about our ways, our language, our laws, indigenous Tsilkotin laws. So that's a bit about me. I've rodeoed. Rode bulls for 15 years. Overall champ in 93, and mountain race for 32 years, and I've won a lot of championships and mountain race in that. So, yeah, I'm very fortunate. And, you know, I say you have to be lucky to be good, but you have to be good to be lucky as well. And take every advantage you can. Be the most positive. Always help out. Learn. You never know too much. I'm always learning from young people to elders, from you, from everyone. That's my motto.
That's incredible. So you, Hani Gwit'in, never signed any treaties historically. So you have the title to your land that is different from other First Nations people.
Yes, we never gave up signing a treaty or lost in the war. There's a whole history about it in our title case.
Yeah.
So this June on the 26th, 2024, it'll be 10 years since our title win. There's actually a book that a UBC professor, Lorraine Weir, and I worked on. We interviewed 40 Tsleil-Waututh'en, Hanikvah'atayin elders and leaders about the title journey. It talks about everything from the 1864 Tsleil-Waututh'en War to the smallpox, prior to that, 1862 smallpox, then the Indian Act, residence of school. There's a lot of, there's a fish lake, Tsleil-Waututh'en B, an open pit mine proposal that we're still fighting today. Our declaration of 89. So there's a lot of things there that we come from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm from Sweden, so it's a little different for me. I've been in Canada nearly half of my life now, which has been incredible.
Yes.
And then, of course, learning about Aboriginal people, it's been very, eye-opening and very important. So I'm very thankful that I've been able to connect with you today. So I want to say thank you as well to Christine Gallant and Catherine Betts, who over the years, especially Christine, has connected me to you a long time ago now. So,
my honor, yes.
Oh, wow. So there are wild horses on the land that you live on. So what is your interaction with these horses?
Well, we call them cayuse in our language, meaning wild, not high as horses. So we got language for them. In the Tsleil-Waututh'en, in our way, we have Tsleil-Waututh'en law. There's rules about when the mother's having a baby, when the baby's born, and all those historic events, shape-shifting, how this land is created. Our old-timers talk about the wildlife, the fish, the birds. We all spoke Tsleil-Waututh'en, and there's history about all that. So, in indigenous law, our whole being is for the 7 days in our Tsleil-Waututh'en law. And this 7 days is, what we are raised to be prepared for. And those 7 days, we're going to be on our own. But we're trained. We're trained all our lives since in our mother's womb to be able to survive that day. And some of us, we don't. Back in prior to contact, there's stories about that. And, this Tsleil-Waututh'en law is like a trail. And elders said, this trail is a trail that we all are the most powerful at. And when we got power, it's not for us, it's for the people, it's for that trail. It's once we get off that trail, because there are some nice trails, better trails, and it becomes our own agenda. And when we do that, we hurt ourselves, our loved ones, our future generation, our land and our resources. So, yeah, and this spiritual journey is like a creator looking after us. And when we stay on that trail, all of us together, we're much more powerful and we're much more honored. And we, we die on that trail. So that's an honor. And that's about the Tsleil-Waututh'en law. And, this 7 days is a journey that we are prepared for. And that's your adulthood, when a female gets her menstruation, when a young boy begins this man's voice, and they're on their own for 7 days. And in the 7 days, they only can eat a little bit, drink a little bit, and only when they have to. And then they get their power. So every Tsleil-Waututh'en male and female have a power of an animal, a bird, or a fish. That's our old timers said, we all spoke the same language, so that's where it comes back. So, and then once we become adult, our whole journey is to prepare our next generation to look after our people, to work with our land and resources, and provide for ourselves and protect, all. We say Nankai. Nankai means the earth and everything in it, including us. So Nankai, that's who we are, and that's how we live, and there's rules around all that. So that's about the Tsleil-Waututh'en law. And horses is part of that. Wild horses, I have an uncle who's passed on, but he did his journey, and his power was wild horse. And my mom told me a story that he was training this wild horse, and he came over, and he got off that wild horse and just crawled on around underneath and slapped the legs, and the horse was just shaking. And my mom was worried, saying, "You're going to get kicked." And my uncle said, "The only time it's going to kick me, if it's going to kill me." So that's sort of, you know, wild horses, that's who we are. And, you know, it's been before my time. And, you know, this whole journey, I was talking about the 10th anniversary coming up, the 25-year journey, and you can hear about it in Tlayudat Ich. Tlayudat Ich is a book that Professor UBC, University of BC, Lorraine Weir, worked with me on interviewing, you know, 40 elders, and it's like being around a campfire. And this campfire is, some people talk longer than others, and some just chime in. And that's how you'll feel when you read this book. You could listen to one person, it'll be amazing. And you can read about this one person telling their story, and it'll fulfill you. But then it's organized in a way that that it all comes together and interrelated. It's about almost 500 pages of there's a lot of photos.
Oh,
it's
nice.
About that tidal wind journey. It's about smallpox, the Indian Act, residential school, you know, Hanikutin, Selkotin, who we are, a lot of what we went through. And, you know, there's some really tough moments that our people shared. Some of the people who shared surprised me what they shared, but it's healing, it's powerful. And there's some happy times too. So it's a book that you gotta check out.
Where can you find it? Where do we buy it?
You could get it in, I think they're still in Amazon.
Okay.
You can get them in Amazon. Indigo Books is another one. So, you know, it's Talent Books. If you look up Talent Books, and they'll have all these books that they've written, it'll be in there. So LHA and then YUDIT apostrophe ISH. And that means we don't give up. We just keep trying.
That's very good. We need that kind of hope. It's very difficult times we live in, with a lot of trouble in the world. And what you're talking about, respecting and continuation, it's a very different approach to what we see for a majority, really, of society, where there's a lot of consumption and disconnect also from each other. So,
yes. So when I speak about the smallpox, how that impacted us, and then 2 years later, that Cote d'Ivoire, part of protecting our land, and the treason that the government did to us, and then going into the Indian Act, you know, getting, you know, we lost 80 to 90% of our people, and what was left, parts of that went into the Cote d'Ivoire, and a militia tried to get them, because the government was concerned that if the Tsilhqot'ins get away with this, then there'll be an Indian indigenous uprising. So they sent out a militia, but their leader got killed by our Tsilhqot'in, and they gave up. So the government told our chiefs that, you know, we want a peace talks. So, you know, some of the warriors didn't trust. Some of the warriors said, well, you know, we lost a lot of people in the smallpox. Sacrifice to see if this is really what this peace talks is really going to go ahead. But what happened is they were tried and they were shackled. They were tried and hung. So that's where we come from. This story is told to every child in the Tsilhqot'in. And that's why we are a nation. That's why we are powerful, and that's why we want this Aboriginal title. And wild horses is a big part of all of us. And wild horses is, you know, a mismanaged process. And, you know, we talk about the residential school, talk about taking our language taken our culture, taken the Indian out of us, and how that impacted our history with all our wildlife, including wild horses. And now we're trying to bring it all back. You know, I'm fortunate. I can speak my language. I've been horses all my life. But there are some of our Sikhotin people that never sat on a horse, even in my community. And we're bringing that back. And there's, our Honeywood in Youth wagon trip. And we have gatherings every year that horses would be ridden to go there. In our community at Honeywood Inn and in the nation, that's Sikhotin nation. So we're one of six Sikhotin communities, and we together, the title case started from Honeywood Inn, and then with the support of the nation, and when we won the trial, and we're going to go into negotiations and appeals, then as a nation, we move forward. So, you know, it's a long journey, 5-year trial. And then 2008, we tried to negotiate with BC in Canada. And then got nowhere. In 2009, we negotiated a consultation agreement. And 2010, we appealed to Supreme Court of BC. Decision came down, the Declaration of Rights to Hunt, to Trap, to Trade, and also to Catch and Use Wild Horses remained, and that became the law in 2012. And we appealed the title to Supreme Court of Canada in 2012, and it got approved in 2013. The hearing was in November of 2013, and we had I called them lawyers, all our elders and leaders who testified in the trial, went on a journey across Canada, meeting Indigenous people right across Canada to Ottawa, and doing gift exchange, sharing our stories, sharing our warriors, and supporting each other. All over 600 Indigenous leaders and lawyers intervening in our case, supporting us. And we had, you know, two non-First Nations, the local Chilco and Community Resorts, who supported us. And, you know, and in Canada, we had a group that intervened with their lawyer saying that we have title. So it was a huge day in November 7, 2013 in Ottawa. And we were concerned about 8 judges, because if they all vote, there was a 4-4 tie, then, you know, where that goes. It happened, you know, in the Calder case in, you know, 1973. So, but all 8 judges ruled in our favor, and here we are.
Good. Well, in preparation for our conversation today, I was watching your Facebook and just looking at the photos, and it's really incredible, the land that you live on.
Yes. We're right in the mountains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was sharing little reels and just, you know, making little videos that we're having this conversation, and I think for people that don't live where you are, they go, wow, that is truly, truly beautiful.
Yes, we have an 80-kilometer lake. That's where a lot of the tidal covers around. It says Kokbi, also known as Chelko Lake, and it's about 10 kilometers wide, and it's just turquoise blue. You can drink out of it. We got Taseko Lakes is green, glacial water. And then you got Tatlioko Lake. Taseko is about 40 kilometers long, and Tatlioko about 30 kilometers long, another beautiful lake. So those are the largest lakes that are close together in Chilcotin, and the most, and then in our area in Honeywood Inn, the most western part of the nation of our Chilcotin territory.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned
salmon every year. Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, too. You mentioned about rain and snow, that last year there wasn't a lot of rain, and now we haven't had a lot of snow. So hopefully you guys get a lot of rain this spring and a really nice, fertile summer.
Yes. Our communities in the Tsekhotin, we've been all bringing back our cultural burning for years. It's been suppressed from the government because they didn't want no fires. And part of that was to be able to harvest all the timber that they could. But then the global warming, the beetles, mountain pine beetles, the fir beetles, and all that. And then the wildfire in 2017 changed everything. So in tidal land, in the rights area, tidal land is half the size of the rights area. And we have a lot of timber. I say mismanaged because there's a lot of underbrush, windfalls that we're working on slowly, working from inside to out from our communities so that if the fire does go, we protect our community. But as we further we go out, we want to make the forestry healthy again. So there could be some harvesting for use of housing, for fencing, for firewood, and for others. And we want to be able to clean up the forest floor, so the underbrush. You know, we'll use the cultural burning as part of that, and there's certain times you can. But today, in the summer, you wouldn't even want to think about it. Even in May, there's been a forest fire.
Oh, wow.
So that's how, you know, it's really, you know, we have to be really careful. And as a community, as a nation, along with the governments, we're working on a plan to assure, first and foremost, is safety. And we do have a lot of fire bans, especially on dry, hot seasons. And we work with government on that, but we also create our own. And, you know, that's, you know, an economy to us is bringing back our language, to bring back our Tsilhqot'in law, to being able to be out on the land, hunting and fishing, gathering roots and berries, and be able to, you know, we're looking at other things like tourism, you know, things like that. And there's, you know, a different way of using our timber and gravel and mineral. And how do we use it sustainably so that we don't destroy our water, our wildlife and fish? So those are the things that with our communities, with our members, with our elders and youth, working on. And it's going to be 10 years coming up June. So, you know, we're coming down to an agreement with BC and Canada on a few things, and emergency, you know, wildfire flooding is a big part of that agreement. And also language, culture, housing, those are priority for us. And then an agreement that we could sign long term to be able to, you know, bring back our own ways, our language, our culture. And then wild horses are a part of that. Right now, wild horses population, because there's ranch, big ranch in our area, and our people used to have cattle too, and ranching. And so now we're looking at finding a way to balance with, you know, our wildlife, the wild horses, the moose, the deer, and also the predators, because the predators are a big part of the ecosystem. And because of the predators, we have healthy meat, because the predators take the weak ones and the sick ones. And so when we go after our food, then we know it's healthy. The strong ones are the ones that are, the healthy ones are the ones that the predators can get at. So, you know, right now we're creating a process for wild horses so that they're back out into the mountains that, like they used to. And the population is a concern, so we're working at ways to improve, to slow down the growth, but also to improve the genes. And our leaders before my time used to be always running up horses and bringing in new and taking out the old. And, you know, I have a cousin who's 80 years old. All his life, he's always riding a wild horse. Because what he does is he'll go chase and catch wild horses, train them, and then he'll be riding and hunting and fishing, and someone want to make a deal, either barter or trade or for money, and he'll lose his horse and he'll go find him. And that's what people do all their life.
Yeah.
So that's what we want to do, to be able to bring that back so our people can, you know, catch and use wild horses and create a market, create a way of life, and bringing that back into our culture.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. It really is. So what are you looking forward to right now? What are you up to? What's next for you?
Well, right now I'm back in Chief, so we're working with British Columbia. We're working with Canada. There's also elections happening not too distant future with BC and Canada. And we've got a 10th year anniversary. So right now, between our 6 Tsleil-Waututh communities and BC and Canada, we're aiming for the 10th anniversary of the title win. So June 26th is the main day, but we're looking at a celebration on the 24th and the 25th and 26th. And part of that celebration is celebrating, you know, who we are today and what we're trying to be tomorrow. We want to hang on to the past, but move into the future in a good way. And also, you know, invite other indigenous, non-indigenous leaders, people, who've been a big part of our success, because indigenous, since way back, they've been in meetings, they've been in treaties, they've been in and out of court, they've been in on roadblocks, they've been lobbying. And with all their work along with ours, that's why we won. And there's a lot of, certainly in our title land, we have, we call islands. When we went to Supreme Court of Canada, we left out private lands and we left out reserves. So when we won title, there's reserves and private lands and title land. So we're communicating and working and putting plans forward together. And so the 10th anniversary is showing that. How far have we gotten? What is our goal? And BC and Canada are invited. The local city and regional district are invited. And we got First Nations across BC and Canada that will be inviting. And we want to celebrate together and recognize our warriors. And our warriors at home is not only the ones who testified in court, the elders and leaders, but also their helpers. The people who, because our elders couldn't speak English, so there was a lot of transcribing, translating. Oh. So we want to recognize them and people who brought them to Victoria, you know, and took care of them, making sure they were fed and, you know, that they were able to have a room to stay. And then, so we want to recognize all those within the 3 days of that celebration and just, you know, open up and show how it is to be in title land, how important is Aboriginal title to British Columbia, how important is Aboriginal title to Canada and to the international communities, because it's the Indigenous people that know the land. We know the lands way back. I can bring you to a place here in Tsleil-Waututh where things change, where an animal turned to stone, where a person turned to stone, and we got names for those places, and we got stories about those places. So we're really connected, like many Indigenous people. And as Indigenous, you even think about Indigenous like England, like Germany. You know, there's some changes in those countries, but they're Indigenous to their land. They know their land. So that's who we are. And recognize Indigenous people in all the different international communities, you know, it's going to save our planet. It's going to prosper our economy. It's going to protect our future. So that's sort of where this 10th anniversary means to us. And, you know, there's so many ideas that our people have and practice. And, you know, there's not enough hours in the day, time in the week to make it all happen. So we got to make long-term plans. Mm-hmm. And we got to invest into our youth. And Tsleil-Waututh law, our Indigenous law, is you know, the main vein to make it happen.
That's incredible. It's very rejuvenating speaking with you, because in this fast-changing world that we live in, where a lot of people are very willing to just sort of abandon all the things that we used to know, or, you know, even human connections and diplomacy, you know, even peace talks, or even who we are, our identity. A lot of people are struggling with, you know, identity other than just being a consumer in this society.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you guys are time immemorial.
Yes. And, you know, we didn't get involved to go after Aboriginal rights and title. We actually sat down with companies. We actually sat down with governments, locally, provincially, federally. And in the end, we had no choice but to file an Aboriginal trapline case back in 1990. And then we had an outer court settlement on the trapline where that logging company agreed to stay out of our trapline for 5 years. And then in 1990, there was a large area in the Hanikutin Tselkotin territory that was set aside for future plans. And when we developed our August 23, 1989 declaration saying nothing's going to happen with our involvement, we don't agree with clear-cut logging, we don't agree with mining, we don't agree with commercial road building, and we don't agree with flooding, because in the 70s, BC was trying to create a hydro, and part of that hydro was in our area. That was going to put us underwater. Oh. Hanikutin, Maya Valley would have been underwater. So that's where we come from. And today, if you look from the satellite, you take a picture, you will see the boundary of Hanikutin, the Maya Valley Aboriginal Preserve, because there's no logging, no mining in that area. And you will see it. So it's really, and there's a lot of people involved, Indigenous, non-Indigenous. There's so many groups. We, you know, Western Canada Wilderness Committee, David Suzuki Foundation, Lenan Foundation from down south in United States, Friends in the Maya Valley, who's been part of us for a long time. And, you know, there's, you know, Teletonbi Fish Lake, Teletonbi is Fish Lake. There's Friends of Fish Lake in the Cariboo Tselkotin in our area. There's like 15 indigenous communities in the Cariboo Tselkotin. Three nations. We say Tselkotin, there's Shewetmek, and the Dakash, the three different nations in our area. And support from everyone to protect our lake from an open pit mine for 20 years. We're still fighting today. And to protect our area. And, you know, to unite not only our people, but to unite everyone, because there's a lot of people, including yourself, that wants to make sure that our animals, our fish, our wildlife, our waters, you know, our lands are protected, that we got to find another way, a different way. And yeah, that's something that we're searching, that we're working on. And, you know, we're coming from our Tselkotin law to do that. So we're learning. As I speak, we're learning. You know, 10 years coming up pretty quick. We're like, where did it all go?
Yeah.
Seems like we're starting here. But there's a lot of good work that our nation, our community, BC and Canada has been doing, and we want to continue that. And, you know, wild horses is right now a big problem in North America. And hopefully what we're doing is going to help solve those problems. And how do we move forward?
Right. Good. Good conversation. Do you know how many horses you have on the land?
We got about, I would say, between 250 to maybe 300 in our community. That's wild horses. And then in the, we call it Hatalachet, because we're between the largest lake in the Tselkotin, 80 kilometers, Tselko Lake, and Taseko Lakes. And they call it the Brittany Triangle, but we call it Hatalachet. There's about anywhere between 70 to 100 head of horses that come and go. And that area is pristine. There's, you know, it used to be our main trail, our main highway back in the day. And as time went on, it became more remote. And there's pit houses, there's homesteads, there's ranches that's been abandoned. And there's wild horses, there's moose and deer, bears and wolves that all exist in there. And the numbers are balancing. So here in Hani, because of a lot of traffic, and because, you know, our people kind of lost our ways with the residential school, the Indian Act, and the impact of the European contact, our horses have became into numbers that are becoming a concern. So that's why, you know, we want Aboriginal title to catch and use wild horses. So that's what we're doing. We're managing, you know, Tsleil-Waututh Nation is working with us. And a pilot project we're doing here, you know, if works good, we'll be able to use it across the Tsleil-Waututh. But part of that is fencing, bringing the fencing back, fencing off some of the big meadows where there's a lot of traffic, a lot of community members, because that's where the horses are able to hang out and the predators cannot get in there because there's so much traffic. So, you know, we got horses that are weak and that are poor, and horses that are powerful, that are really good looking. And it's because, you know, when the predators and the ungulates and the wild horses are coexisting, you'll always have healthy, strong population. And we don't have that now. You know, our moose numbers are low. You know, our deer numbers are becoming a concern. The goats, the sheep, the horse numbers are impacting the grasslands. And, you know, we got horses that, you know, back in the day, you wouldn't want to use them. So, but there are a lot of good horses. So our goal now is to be able to cut some of our stallions, our studs, and vaccinate some of our mares so that they don't have colts for 5 years. And it's going to be strategically done so that we'll make sure to protect the really nice, strong horses.
Okay.
And the weaker ones and the older ones, we might be cutting and we may be vaccinating.
Oh, okay.
So that's sort of the plan. And some of the good ones will be also cut and vaccinated. But it's a strategy that we're going to try. But we've also been fencing. And we fence off areas so that the horses will be more into the mountains like they used to be back in the day. And those horses were really powerful. You know, I mentioned earlier that I mountain raced for 32 years. Horses that were really powerful. There's some powerful horses today. But back in the day, I've got cousins and uncles and aunts that horses they caught in the mountains were the most fast, the most strong. So that's the goal. That's the process we're working on. And, you know, it's going to be a long 5-year, 10-year plan. We're going to be collaring some. We're going to be, you know, microchipping some and learn from them. What is going on? What's happening? And then, you know, as we move forward, the fences are going to be built. And, you know, there'll be feed for horses, there'll be feed for moose and deer. And that's our goal, to always have horses, to always have moose and deer and goats and sheep. Right now, they're not balanced together well because our way's been impacted, we've been influenced. And we're trying to bring that back in us through our Tsleil-Waututh in law.
That's good work.
Thank you. So I'm excited, you know, to connect with you, to see and hear people like yourself and many others that are looking at a different way. And, you know, there's a lot of ways that we learn in this world, and we need to keep learning and moving forward in a good way. And I think when industries become too big and the money becomes too important, And those monies elect people. And people who get elected, you know, they're stuck. They can't do the right thing because they're not going to get back in. So that's what we're dealing with. It's a vicious, vicious world right now. And, you know, I've been, like I said, I've been chief for 24 years. I lost election twice. And I had a young lady beat me and a young man beat me. And I was fortunate enough to get back in both times. And that's teaching me and it's teaching our people. And we are struggling too. But we're getting stronger. And in hopes, what we do is all eyes are on us because we're the first and only Indigenous nation to win Aboriginal title. And we want to make sure the only thing that we're scared of is ourselves. Because if we fall apart and if we go after the money, because in our Indigenous law, you know, that power is for us all, not for me. That power is not for me. If we're talking about money. That money is not for me. It's for us. If we use money in a good way, yes. But sometimes when we get power, when we become a chief, when we become an adult, things change in our head. What we long for and we lose it. And that's why it's called in law, Indigenous law is really, really important. That's going to be our teaching. That's going to be our language. And that's going to be our constitution. And that's how we want to move forward. Because in a given moment, I can lose election and someone else get in that thinks the other way and thinks about money. And people for a while will like it, but in the end, they'll realize that it's not a way to go. So that's what the elder told us. It's like that trail. That trail is for all of us. We're the most strongest. Soon as we start getting off the trail, we just hurt each other. Our future. So that's sort of where we're coming from.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So we do, I don't know, we got 20 minutes, looks like.
Yes, we do.
So I'm open for questions. I can really easily get detailed in one thing. So I'm really cognizant of making sure that I'm trying to stay high level to not get tunnel vision and speak about one situation.
Okay, so when I had reached out, I guess about a month and a half ago, you were going to Ottawa.
Yes.
So you did go to Ottawa. So what happened there?
Well, we were still, you know, the results is not going to come quick. You know, we're looking at, you know, housing. We're looking at an agreement because we have an agreement with BC and Canada to negotiate. And that agreement is going to be over, I believe, in June, possibly September, that we need to renew agreement to keep negotiating. So that was a big one. And then we're also looking at a lot of little details that each community is dealing with. So some of those are coming out quicker, but the bigger overall is we're still waiting. We're still putting pressure. We got a big team at a nation level. You know, we have lawyers that got us here, so we got lawyers at the nation level. We have different experts that help us. And that team is working with a team that BC and Canada puts forward, and we still meet often. Part of all this is also, you know, Tilton B, Fish Lake. You know, we're still dealing with that. You know, so that's still ahead of us that we're working on, and how do we move forward? So some of these answers we're hoping by June, before June, maybe May. And I really believe that BC and Canada want to be able to say on the 10th anniversary on June 26th, this is what we did for the last 10 years. And this is what we want to do the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of what Ottawa is about. So slowly, it's shaping out. We're also going, in April, we're going to the United Nations in New York. And that's going to be, you know, because of our 10-year, we're going to, you know, coming upon 10 years. So that's going to be a message around that. And the youth. We're training our youth. They're doing training right now. And they're going to be going ahead of us, like 4 days ahead of us. And they'll be at the United Nations training and looking at. And that'll be a big part of our delegation with our chiefs when we get to New York. And, you know, do our presentation and updates. And talking to the United Nations floor of, you know, our last 10 years and what we want to do, what the United Nations needs to know and what they need to support, because we're all in this together.
Yeah, I know, right? That's kind of the thing. The world seems very splintered, but we are actually in it together.
Yes. So that's our message, and that will be our message. And we got we have plans with our youth and also sending that message, doing their presentation, and also our message as leaders and our team. So we got an amazing team around us that, you know, our own Tsleil-Waututh people and others outside the Tsleil-Waututh that work with us. So I'm, you know, I haven't been in chief for 5 years from, you know, 2018. And our, you know, young man, Jimmy Lulawak, got in. And then in 2023, I got back in. But he was a big part of our... Him and his wife were a big part of putting a wagon trip together, you know, from the Maya Valley to the Williams Lake Stampede, 8-day trip.
Oh, wow.
Part of our and elders, and they were a big part of that. So, you know, as leaders, we've got a lot of leaders in our communities, in our nation, that do many things that we support, that we look up to, and that we, you know, we continue to work with. You know, we don't agree on everything, right? But at the end of the day, you know, we're coming from our youth. We're on this trail here, and we're going to stay on that trail together no matter what.
That's great. Well, I'm looking forward to your 10th anniversary. So how can we, if we don't live where you live, how can we find out about the day more?
We're working on an agenda, so keep communicating with me. We do have a preliminary agenda, and we also have an invitation list. And yeah, I'll, you know, maybe send me an email request so I got it with me, and when I have these meetings with the team, because it's going to be Hanigutin. The title land is in Hanigutin caretaker area, and the celebration will be in our Namaya Valley Lodge.
Oh.
And Six Nations are coming to our community, and we're going to celebrate it. So it's huge. So yeah, if you can just send me your email, then I can use that moving forward.
Okay, I will. And
communicate.
Thank you. Well, this has been great. It's been nice catching up and learning more. So much information for us to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, back in 1990, we started what we call the Chelco Study Team. And this was a mix of government ministries, Ministry of Parks, Ministry of Mines, Ministry of Forests, and the different ministries. And also the different recreationists, the different... what we call residents and tenure holders, and also industry like logging and mining companies, that we were in this Chelco study. And our August 23, 1989 declaration, we advertised it. We did a press conference in Vancouver, bringing our elders down and to let everybody in BC and Canada know this is who we are, and the good in Chilcotin people, and that nothing's going to happen in our caretaker area and in Chilcotin with all our involvement. So that was, and we had talked about how that can happen. So BC, there's different cases, like the Haida case forces companies and governments to consult with us. So the government had to consult with us from the declaration and involve us. And we were the co-chair. So I was chief. I was co-chair with BC Mines and BC Parks. And we had 3 years of meeting.
Oh.
And we came with a protected area in the management zone. And that protected area became an option that there's going to be no logging, no mining. And there was several options. And part of that was parks, provincial parks. And our people, like, I don't know about parks because we want to be able to still live in there. We want to still be able to hunt and fish. Our Aboriginal rights is there. So we had to sign an MOU with BC so that it can become a park. So in the MOU, it talks about this does not affect, this is not a treaty agreement, and that in the future, if we want a different designation, that they can't use this against us. So we had lawyers involved, and we came up with an MOU, which will be co-managing the park area. And this park's name was our sacred mountain up here, Tsel Os and his wife, Eniute, and 6 children. And how they turn the stone, how they separate, and how they got to look after us and the land from here forward. So Tsel Os Parks is, Tsel Os is overseeing the park area to protect it. So we're Tsel Os people, and we co-manage with BC Parks. So in that, between 1990 to 93, we had meetings, and it became a park. So from 93, we had our own rangers. We were co-managing with BC Parks. And then at the same time, an open pit mine on Fish Lake, Tilton B, opened up in 1992. So we tried to sit down with the company and try to, you know, they found a large deposit. We wanted to know how they're going to get it out. We said, we want to be involved in interviewing and hiring your experts on how you're going to do that. But they went ahead, they hired experts, they did 8 options, and they told us what options that they liked without involving us. So that's a long journey, long story. You know, while we're going to court, we filed it in 1998. 2007 was a trial decision. So,
wow.
So in 2008, we signed an agreement with the company on this proposed open pit mine. And we're going to look at the footprint of the open pit mine. What is the benefits of that footprint? What is the impact of that footprint? But then we fell apart after 2 years. And then we end up in an environmental assessment process. So we didn't want to join BC. We end up joining the federal government. So BC approved the environmental assessment in 2010. And then we went in a process with federal government in 2010 with with us involved in the federal environmental panel here. We end up getting a decision in our favor from federal government that the mine can't go ahead.
Okay.
So then the same company put another plan forward in 2013, and we went through it again, environmental assessment. Then the decision went in our favor again. So there's a lot of moving parts while we're going to court, while we created a Tsel Os Park. So by the time everything was done, when we won title, part of the Tsel Os Park became title. And in the title land portion, we signed a bridging agreement with BC Parks, and there's still a park today in our title land. There's still a BC Park in our title land through an agreement.
Oh, okay.
So there's still relationships they're still working on.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is struggles. But I think at the end of the day, it's coming out positively. And, you know, we have agreements regarding emergencies, wildfire, floods, public roads into title land. How these private landowners can get into title land and be able to have access to their home and to be able to have access before they used to get their permits, their tenure from BC, but now they got to get it from us. So those are things that are falling into place right now.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
A lot of those people, Chelco and Community Resorts, they intervene in our title case saying we got title. So there's good relationship. Some of it is some people buy and sell, and some of those relationship is not that good, but overall it's good. So that's sort of in between all the whole title case journey that we've been through, that our people have been through. My son is 34 years old. This whole proposed mine in Fish Lake has been all his life. All his life he never knew. He always never really knew that this place is going to be destroyed on him.
Wow.
So we got children in our communities for 34 years, all their lives being threatened by an open pit mine. So, and it's still threatened today. So we're working on an agreement, and we're hoping that by June, it'll be resolved.
I hope so.
Yes.
That's a lot of having to go to court over something that you shouldn't have to go to court over, for sure.
Yes. Yeah, so I know those are some of the little journeys that the book talks about. That book, when you buy it, that's what it'll talk about.
Yeah, please send me a link to, I can share it out too. I would like to share it out. It sounds like a really interesting book. You're a very busy man, Chief Roger.
Yes, and I'm honored. There's so many people that help me. We got elders, we got youth, we have different leaders in our community and at the nation level and right across that I feel fortunate to learn from and be humbled by. And, I get smartened up by losing an election to come back a little bit more humble. So.
Hey, that's good.
Yep.
Always learn something.
Yes.
Well, thank you also to Drew Rouse. I did watch the documentary that he made, which features you as well and has lots of scenery and interactions.
He's with us for a little better than a few years, and he did riding with us, and he even joined the mountain race with us. And he's quite a individual, a caring person, has a lot of bright ideas, and he's one of the people that, we call our ally.
That's great. It's good stuff. He came into the studio a few months ago because he lives fairly close to where our station is.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Well, hey, this has been a really great conversation. Thanks for talking with me tonight.
And yes, and
looking forward to staying in touch with you.
Yes, and thank you for taking me in. It's been an honor, and I enjoyed communicating with you and talking about, it's always good when the elder is being heard, the elder will tell you a lot of stories, but as soon as you get sidetracked and you're not paying attention, they'll stop talking. So thank you.
Thank you.